everyone can please find their seats if there are enough chairs to go around. I'd like to welcome you all to the Student Medical Ethics Society event, Genetic Screening, the most important test you'll ever take, however bad you thought your finals were last semester. My name is Michaela Goldberg. I'm on the board of the Student Medical Ethics Society, and I'll just give you our program for tonight. First, we'll be hearing from Rav Willig about the halachic importance of genetic screening. And then we'll hear from Danira Goldenberg, a genetic counselor, who will explain something about genetic diseases and the way the screening will work. Before I go any further, I would just like to thank the people who made this event possible, the Yeshiva University Center for the Jewish Future, the Torah Activities Council, my fellow board members from the Student Medical Ethics Society, as well as other student volunteers who all put in tremendous amount of time and support to bring this event to you. So now we'll be hearing from Rav Willig on the halachic importance of genetic screening. He hardly needs an introduction. He's one of the Rosh Yeshiva at the Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Theological Seminary. He's been the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mazur School of Talmudic Studies. He's a respected posek, and we're honored tonight to hear his perspective on halachic screening.
Tonight's topic is a very important one, and I'm aware, before embarking upon it, that there are differences of opinion, both within the rabbinic community, within the general world community, and certainly within the Jewish community. And therefore, what I'm telling you is my take on these things. Feel free to have different opinions, and I'll be happy to take questions and try to answer them as best I can. Genetics is a field which is constantly expanding. There are more and more diseases and conditions which can now be tested for. I would like to start at a particular starting point. Going back a number of decades, a bit more than three decades ago, when the Ashkenazi Jewish community was devastated by the appearance of the Tay-Sachs disease. I'm not a scientist, and we have a very distinguished genetic counselor who promised to correct me on the spot whenever I make a mistake. Not till the end. Correct me, raise your hand as soon as I make a mistake. Yes. Tay-Sachs is a disease which exists only in a situation in which both parents, father and mother, are carriers of the particular gene. Even in such instances, I believe the statistical chances are only 1 in 4. So a couple can, perhaps unknowingly, live a charmed life, be both Tay-Sachs carriers, have healthy children, and be none the wiser. On the other hand, they can lead a very difficult life if the statistics don't apply in their case, and they have numerous children suffering from Tay-Sachs. Such was the fate of a very wonderful gentleman named Rabbi Eckstein, who lost numerous children to this terrible disease and decided he was going to do something about it. It's a rare individual who rises above personal misfortune to achieve so much for the betterment of the community at large. And so in my book, this man is a real hero. Coming from the community of Williamsburg, not known, to use our modern phrase, as a Torah Umada community, a community where the vast majority of its population never went beyond high school, if that. And despite this challenge, this distinguished rabbi found a beautiful solution to the problem of Tay-Sachs, which was ravaging the community. I can tell you personally that when my children were very young, we brought them to a pediatrician. I'll tell you his name. His name is Dr. Gribitz, who practiced in Mount Sinai Hospital, was living at the time in Riverdale. He would complain to me and to some of my rabbinic colleagues whose children were his patients as well. It's terrible. So many Hasidic families in Williamsburg are being devastated by this Tay-Sachs phenomenon. Can't you help me out? Can't you find a dispensation to abort a child, a fetus, that in fact suffers from Tay-Sachs? Because you could tell, even then, with a process called amniocentesis, you can discover whether the child, definitively, whether the child is going to have the Tay-Sachs disease or will not. Again, 1 in 4 on average. We'll abort them, and that's all. So we told the distinguished doctor that there may be certain rabbis who allow it. There was a very, very famous rabbi, the late Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who passed away only recently, who was up front and center permitting abortions in these cases. Tonight is not the time to talk about the permissibility of abortions. It's a very complex issue. To make a long story very, very short, it really depends upon whether abortion is viewed as an act of murder or a lesser prohibition, such as an act of wounding. If it's murder, there is absolutely no dispensation. This is the opinion, the printed opinion in any event, of Rav Moshe Feinstein and Igros Moshe. Rabbi Waldenberg says it's not murder, it's wounding, and therefore some wounds are permissible. We do have operations in life which are permissible woundings. Despite the permissible view, and there are many, even to this day, who follow that view and are actually implementing it and advocating it, and I happen to have a particularly sympathetic attitude towards that point of view, there are certainly others who would not allow such abortions. What to be done? Rabbi Eckstein founded a movement called Dor Yesharim. And it works in the following way. Every youngster, male or female, is tested at a young age. Should be done, the way it's usually done, is that when the average young girl finishes high school, even in Williamsburg, they usually finish high school before they get married. So when, let's say, 17 or so, 18, they're tested, and they have a number. They are not informed anything about the results of their test. I want to state up front, and again, I can be corrected by the geneticist if I make a mistake. Originally, Dor Yesharim was founded for the express purpose of eliminating Tay-Sachs. Now they're testing for many other diseases. But let's go to the paradigm of Tay-Sachs. Given a number, you have a number. We're not telling you whether you carry Tay-Sachs or not, just have a number. Okay? Young men, when they become of marriageable age, usually a little bit later, are supposed to get tested as well. Remember, this is Williamsburg, where young men don't meet young women in the library. They meet on a prearranged basis. You know, the European model carried forth to Williamsburg. And many of you have been through many frustrating experiences can say that maybe it's not so bad to have it done that way. In any event, so before it's arranged for a young man to meet a young lady, the parents who are arranging all this, of course, will provide numbers. Each one will call the central office and say, my number is such and such, my number is such and such, and they give permission to, you know, they say, well, all the details that they work it out. And in the Daria Sharon central office in Williamsburg, they see these two numbers. Now they know that there are three possibilities. Neither has Tay Sachs, one has Tay Sachs, or both have Tay Sachs. If either of the first two possibilities are in fact the truth, they get back a green light. You have no problem getting married. When they get married, they don't know which of the two it is. Neither has it, or only one has it. They continue to live in ignorance. Ignorance is shattered only in the relatively rare event that both parties have Tay Sachs. Then we have no choice but to say this marriage is a no-go. And again, in the old days when they're only testing for Tay Sachs, you knew what that meant. Your innocence was shattered. No choice. Better that way than marrying and suffer the terrible ravages of the potential and the actual birth of Tay Sachs children. This is the essence of Daria Sharon. As again, later on, it was expanded to a number of other diseases. I have a list in my pocket of some of them that I just jotted down. I don't know what they mean, frankly, some of them, but let's see if I have it here. I can't even pronounce all of them. Fanconi, anemia, Blooms, Niemann-Pick, Canavan, Gaucher, cystic fibrosis. These are the ones that they were testing as of 6 years ago. Now, that's a total of seven. 6 years ago, there were a total of seven diseases. How are they up to, how many up to now? 11? Daria Sharon was up to 9? NYU was 11? Okay. Let me tell you, how do I know all this? I mean, I guess you probably, it's all printed in your brochures. When I was married, long time ago, we didn't know about these things. We got married. When my children started getting married, already it was a known problem. And my wife and I decided that we're going to try to do is test ourselves. Instead of putting every child through this trauma, we'll test ourselves. We did for Tay Sachs. We both were negative. My wife and I are both negative, guaranteed. And mutations are mutations, but statistically it's guaranteed that the children are not carriers. It was great. We thought we had done. We were so proud of ourselves. We did right by our children. And then we discovered what kind of one did. We found out 6 years that they're testing for seven things. We went back to the lab. We tested for six additional diseases. I just read off my chart. I looked up my chart this morning. And Baruch Hashem, B'chazdi Hashem, we were both negative for all these six as well. Now, B'li Neder, I'm told, I have to check for four more. Okay, B'li Neder, we will try to get it done. My bias has always been to try to know what's happening. That's my bias. I repeat again, this is not to say anything bad about Daria Sharon. I am a tremendous fan of Daria Sharon. And in those communities where it works best, it's a godsend. In we'll call our community, it's not as popular for a variety of reasons. One, marriages aren't arranged. People meet each other in the library. I'm just using that as an example. They can meet each other in summer camp or who knows, a whole variety of other places. And they can become emotionally involved. They'll move up a notch to, quote, romantically involved. And then, use your imagination, even more involved. And all of a sudden, they start thinking, hey, wait a minute. Wow, maybe we're both carriers for something. This couldn't happen in Satma. This couldn't. Everything's prearranged. Issue number one. Issue number two, in our community, people have a certain attitude they don't like to be unaware of what's going on. They like to be aware. So for this reason, while I endorse Dor Yesharim, and anyone here who wants to use Dor Yesharim has my absolute bracha, the other alternative for this community is that the young man and young women be tested. But my wife and I did as a rarity. That's our own plan. The parents are tested. More commonly, a young man and young woman are tested when they are in a mature age, and they're given their sheet. They know what they have, what they don't have. If they both are carriers of any one of these 7 or 11 diseases, and they come to me, what should we do? I tell them, don't get married. Rebbe, she's a wonderful girl. I'm so close, we're so attached, we've been going on for 3 months. I say, don't get married. Now, I've been saying this for a long time. 30 years ago plus, I had a Talmud then, 30 years ago, who came to me and said, Rebbe, what do I do? I'm going out with this girl, and I find out I'm a carrier for TSX. I said, well, why are you testing then? Just starting. I'm carrying TSX, she carries TSX. What should I do? I said, don't get married. We're about to get engaged. I said, don't get engaged and don't get married. Didn't believe me. Didn't want to accept it from me. He went to a quote-unquote more liberal rabbi. I'll give you his name. I say it with the utmost respect. His name was Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, who was teaching in YU at the time. He is the, he told him, don't get married. Baruch Hashem, he didn't get married to that young lady. I don't know what happened. I don't even know if I even knew who the young lady was, but I know he got married to another wonderful young lady. They're both not so young anymore. It's 30 years later, they have children and grandchildren, everybody's healthy. I know the heartstrings are very taut, and the rabbi sometimes is looked upon as a bad guy. Now I want to up the stakes. I'm telling you a real life story, a real story that happened last year. Talmud comes to me and says, repeat the same story. Going out with a young lady, about to get engaged. We decided let's get tested, and guess what? I'm a carrier for Tay-Sachs, and so is this young lady. I told him, guess what? Don't get married. Rebbe, I can get married, there's no problem anymore. No problem. Why? I'll give you a 6-letter alphabet soup. IVFPGD. Who knows what that stands for? Raise your hand. Okay, a lot of people know. I'm very impressed. IVF is the more... that everyone knows. Who does not know what IVF stands for? Who does not know in this room? Everyone knows. Oh, really? Okay. In vitro fertilization. It is a artificial means of procreation when the seed of the man and the egg of the woman are removed artificially, mixed together in a lab. They make 1 cell, 2 cells, 4 cells, 8 cells. You're studying biology a little bit. And then afterwards, after a certain point, it's introduced into the woman's body, and then b'chazdei Hashem, a healthy child is born. I know many children born from IVF. It's a miracle. It overcomes many procreative problems. I'm discussing now IVF between husband and wife. We're not here to discuss donor egg or donor sperm. It's for a different night. If you want to invite me, I'll talk about it. It's another issue, not for today. Although it really does belong to today a little bit, but maybe we'll come to it just only briefly. Husband and wife, they just can't have the children naturally there's a blockage, there's this. They have to concentrate the sperm. There are many different reasons why it has to be done this way. Okay. You still run the same chances. But then they created a new thing. PGD. Pre-implantation genetic... I said it wrong?
No.
Genetic diagnosis. I believe that's what it stands for. An amazing scientific feat. I said before, 1, 2, 4, 8 is an 8-cell unit. Believe it or not, in that little tiny 8-cell unit, you can remove one of those 8 cells, test it in the lab, know right then and there if it's carrying Tay-Sachs or not. If it is carrying Tay-Sachs, you put it away. If not, you insert it into the woman and a healthy child is born. So Rebbe, let me get married to the girl. What's the problem? IVF, PGD. I told him, don't get married. Why? Why am I being so cruel and so harsh? There is a solution. I will tell you my view. This solution, as easy and as simple as it sounds, is not so easy and not so simple. It involves significant emotional cost. The ideal way for a couple to have children is in the natural form. When it has to be done in this unnatural form, it imposes great burdens on a man and a woman. Remember, in order to be sure that no Tay-Sachs children are born to them, they have to constantly be on some form of contraception, with the sole exception of the time when they want to have their children through, again, IVF, PGD. This is itself a tremendous burden. The fact that their intimate personal life is completely detached from the procreative aspect of marriage is a significant emotional burden. To my mind, it's not wise for an individual to enter into such a burdensome relationship when there are alternatives. I don't mean to be a party pooper or a spoil sport, but this couple's not married yet. I believe they should break up, sorry to say it, and pursue other relationships and make sure that they're not both carrying the same disease. I met a lot of resistance. Other rabbis were brought into this situation. They all said the same thing. There was still a lot of resistance. After a lot of resistance, the person finally acceded to what the rabbis were saying. It was a little tough. The parents got involved. So I got a few choice words. Nonetheless, the advice was followed, and I hope that he and she will live happily ever after. I want to make an exception to this rule. There are cases in which I will tell a couple that if they wish to lead their lives this way with IVF, PGD, I can't tell them to do it, but I give them my bracha. That's the following case. There are some genetic diseases which are, I'm using this word in a very general sense, and I don't mean it to be too technical, which are dominant as opposed to recessive. Tay-Sachs, for example, cannot exist in a child as the father and mother are both carriers. So why should a carrier of Tay-Sachs marry another one when he or she can marry somebody else? What's in Ashkenazi, what is it, 1 in 30 approximately in the population? More or less, 25, 30. So look, you know, for everyone who has it, they're 24, 29 who don't have it. You know? What happens if he or she has a different kind of a gene? A gene that no matter who he or she marries, there's going to be a very significant risk of a major genetic problem being passed on to the next generation. Here, for the particular carrier, there are no alternatives. The only responsible way for them to be having children in today's world is with IVF and PGD. I had such a question I received as recently as yesterday. Yesterday, someone comes to me and says, I'm going out with a girl for 2 months, and she told me the night before that she has a certain genetic disease. I never heard of it. I spoke to two MDs in genetics. They both told me it's a serious issue. If you want to be responsible, you have to use the IVF, PGD. I told the young man, listen, I'm not telling you what to do. In my view, in this kind of a case, it's permissible to do it. I'm the same guy who said before not to do it. Here, if you want to do it, you may do it. Why? Because this young lady has to get married. She has to get married. Not to get married, it would be terrible. She has to get married. Someone is going to be willing, hopefully, somebody, to take that jump and to enter into a difficult circumstance with all the burdens involved therein. And part of the reason he's doing it, from my perspective, is the fact that this young lady, whom he's very fond of, no matter what, is going to have to enter into such a relationship with somebody. I volunteer to be that somebody. It's a completely different situation than the case where they're both carrying a recessive gene when nobody, neither of them, has to enter into such a difficult relationship. The truth is, that which I told this person just yesterday, I told another couple years ago, where the woman had a particularly difficult genetic situation, and in that case they got married, and from my understanding they are now pursuing this IVF PGD possibility. I know that what I'm saying will sound inconsistent to some of you. I'm telling you what I think. I said at the beginning, people have a right to disagree with me on anything that I'm saying. I'm giving you my personal view on this matter. I'd like to open a sefer, until now I've been speaking about Peh, and read you some highlights from the one sefer I brought with me. Just I only brought one. They can bring libraries here, books. The sefer I brought with me is a sefer called the Nishmas Avraham by Dr. Abraham. I brought you the English edition. There's also, the Hebrew edition. It's now also in English as well. It's the very opening page of Eben Ha'ezer. Starts with quoting Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, someone who has a genetic problem and his children will live their entire lives with great pain. May this individual not fulfill Pruravu? I'll find a woman, have to get married, I'll find a woman who can have no children. So we'll have no children. If the alternative will be that my children are going to be sick. Shlomo Zalman is not sure. Rav Moshe goes back and forth. These are serious questions, very serious questions. Go further. Shulchan Aruch tells us that a person should not marry into a family of mitzoroyim or nichpin, literally lepers or those who suffer from epilepsy, if there are three instances in the family. This is the documented case of trying to avoid a situation of some kind of a genetic disease. Quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Quote the children from Rav Moshe. A boy of 25 has a disease called Marfan's. Anyone know what Marfan's is? They say Abe Lincoln had it. As I Zuckerman, you know, very tall and thin. What does he do? 50% chance the child will have it. May he marry a woman who can have children? Says Rav Moshe, if a woman is willing to marry him and he has to inform her, he has to inform her. Otherwise, there's a possibility of what we call a kiddush etos, marriage under a false pretense, and even if it doesn't rise to that level, you're fooling someone, you're not allowed to fool someone when it comes to marriage. He should attempt to marry and hope that the children are going to be healthy. We should add that a child who has Marfan's, even if he has the disease, can live even a normal lifespan. There are reduced life expectancy issues, no question. But we don't know exactly. Then he has a tshuva about Tay-Sax, which Moshe writes, Tay-Sax is a good thing to test. Try to test in a way that it shouldn't be cause too many nerves for the youngsters. They quote Rav Zilberstein, the Rav Yashiv's son-in-law. If a couple's about to get married and they both have genes which are for a particular disease, we should tell them not to get married. And if they're married, we should tell them to get divorced. I must tell you, here's where I part company. If they're already married, I myself can't advise them to get divorced. Now, once they're already married and they didn't know about it, I recommend 6 letters. IVF, PGD. And before that, before they had this stuff, if they wanted to have amniocentesis and rely upon the lenient view about abortions, I myself wouldn't stand in their way. But all this is post facto. They're married already. I had a case of Marfan's, very sad case. A particular person received a psak. They told me from Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, that they didn't have to reveal Marfan's against Rav Moshe. How can it be? Don't have to reveal the Marfan's? That's what they told me. Is there a basis for it? Perhaps. There was a tshuva in the Sefer Kilas Yaakov by the Stipula in the Sechti Yavamis, which someone had a certain problem, and he got a psak, you don't have to reveal it. How can that be? You want to sell a car as a scratch on the fender, you have to reveal it. How can you not have to reveal a health problem that you have? So the Stipula says like this, if I have a problem with the car, I could buy 1,000 other cars which are the same thing. I therefore have no right to sell you a car which is defective. When it comes to Shaduchim, no two people are the same. And therefore the fact that the couple like each other, look, must you tell the boy or the girl that you have a pimple on your big toe? Why is that different than a scratch on the car? So you'll understand that a pimple on the big toe is garnished, it's nothing. Why is it nothing? A scratch on the car. Because you are a special person, a man, who are special persons, and therefore people are willing to overlook certain minor problems. The Stipler goes as far as to say that even a more significant problem you do not have to reveal. Obviously, if it's very, very significant, you must reveal. How very is very? He says it's so very that if the person discovered it after the marriage, they would walk out. Not less than that. What's his proof? A Gemara and Yavamis. It was a man who couldn't get married because although he was Jewish, his father was not Jewish. No one wanted to marry him. He was counseled, go to a faraway place and get married. That means withhold information that your father's not Jewish. So on this basis, the Stipler ruled, you can withhold personal information as well. Others disagree. They say that's only family information. But information about the person, him or herself, must be revealed. I believe that's the more correct psak. When it comes to health issues, I've always counseled people who have asked me that it should be revealed, but it need not be revealed up front. Because if you're going to reveal it up front, it's very unlikely that the person will get, to use our parlance, a date. Why should they get involved in such an individual? So when do you reveal it? My rule of thumb has always been, you reveal it at the halfway point. It's like a half-life. You know, what is a halfway point? Well, you know how it is. It depends on our world. Well, I'm looking around the world that we live in here. So let's assume that the average couple in our world is not going to get engaged in less than 3 months. Is that a fair statement? Would you say? All right. Some go much longer, but I don't like that too much. But that's a different story. But not less than 3 months. So I would say 6 weeks into the relationship, you have to reveal it. The case I described just now, the revelation came after 2 months, which is, you know, a half-life. It came at the right time. So this way, once there's already an established relationship, so then the person can make a decision. I have situations that people I knew had diabetes. It's a significant health issue. It's even genetic as well. And they both told the other partner halfway through. Other partner agreed to get married. They both were married, blessed with healthy children. They may also have diabetes, I don't know. But you know, you can live with it. Shots, this, that. Hopefully with more medicine, you can live a regular lifespan. Someone come and yell at me. You wasted 2 months of my life. You wasted 2 months of my life. You permitted this boy not to tell me about the diabetes. I went out with him for 2 months. I'm out of here. And I wasted 2 months. My response will be, I'm very sorry. You're an important person, but the other person is also important. And the Rabbanim have to balance these competing considerations. And you don't have to agree with our decision, but you know, you have to make decisions which are going to be the proper balance for all parties concerned. In the same Sefer, Nishmas Avraham, he talks about, are you required to reveal certain genetic or other medical problems? He writes, quote, it's clear that the couple have to reveal one to the other. They must reveal it. That's his psak. No distinctions. That's what he says. Here's a case. A boy had cancer. No one even knows about it. Must you tell the kala? Yes. Absolutely must. There are cases here. Tzitz Eliezer. A woman, unfortunately, was unable to have children in the normal fashion. Have to tell the boy. You must tell. I'm closing the book because there's much more to be read. Much, much more. There are other genetic issues which we face. Difficult issues. Again, pursuant to my own particular way of looking at things, I feel that one should know his or her situation. It can save lives. There are some genes which couldn't be addressed medically. Sometimes rather bold ways. Some of you may have read about the BRCA gene, the breast cancer gene, which is prevalent in Ashkenazi Jewish women. There's also, more recently, a colon cancer gene, which is prevalent. I'm not going to give you any counseling. You have experts in the field. Let me just say that if a particular family has a member of the family who has these diseases, whether it be colon cancer or breast cancer, at a young age, the chances of it being this genetic component are strong. And if one would ask me, again, it's not me, I'm reflecting what my genetic doctors told me, one would be well advised to test for it and do something about it. In the case of colon cancer, if you have the gene, you begin testing early. I know someone, Nebuch, where a parent and a child died one after the other from colon cancer. The parent was somewhat older. The child was very, very young. A child. He was a a grown man in his early 30s, left a widow with small children. If he would have known about it, if he would have... Colon cancer is a preventable disease. That rings in my ears from the physician. He said it crying to me. It's a preventable disease. If you can detect it earlier, there's still polyps, you do treatment, whatever it is, it's preventable. Breast cancer is much more complicated. There are all kinds of different radical potential medical solutions. Very problematic medically, emotionally, procreatively, very problematic. But I still believe that knowledge is important. And again, in our community, where we know a lot about many other things, our health should be something we know about as well. I saw it in one of the ads, they said, take charge of your own future, something like that. Kodesh Baruch was in charge of our future. God in heaven alone is in charge of our future. The question is only, what should we do to be his partner, as it were, in preserving our health and the good health of our children? My view has been, we should take an active role. When it comes to recessive, we can either follow the Dor Yashar model or the independent knowledge model. When it comes to the dominant situation, Dor Yashar won't touch it. It's only for those who want to get involved, who are brave enough to do it. There are those who hide their heads in the sand. They don't want to know about it. They don't want to hear about it. But it is an issue. It's an issue in Shidduchim. Someone died young of breast cancer. And someone suggests that's that woman's sister, for example, or daughter, for example, as a Shidduch. So some of them will want to know, does she carry that gene? He wants to marry a woman who's going to live an average life expectancy. Now, is it possible that he'll be killed in a car crash 1 year later and she'll outlive him by 4 decades? Sure, it's possible. Nonetheless, questions of this nature are legitimate questions. I will stop my presentation and ask you for your legitimate questions before my esteemed colleague will take the floor. Please, if you have a question, raise your hand and speak loudly. Yes. As soon as possible. As soon as possible. Why should they get romantically involved only then to have to worry about the problem? I must tell you, when a couple comes to me to marry, I should be their Masada Kiddushin, on the first line of my check sheet it says, may they marry. And I go into the halachic questions, you know, fathers and adoptions and divorces and conversions, the whole story, and it says there, Dor Yesharim. It's on my piece of paper. Did you go to Dor Yesharim? And if they say no, I say, go get either Dor Yesharim or get tested individually. I'm not going to marry you without it. That's how strongly I feel about this. Any other questions? Yes?
You addressed a couple that is married and finds out that they are carriers. If a couple is already married, would you recommend to them Dafka to go and get tested once they're married?
It's a good question. Personally, I think the answer would be yes. But if they refuse, I can understand it. They're not going to get divorced anyway if they ask me. Rav Zilber says they should get divorced. I can't, you know, everyone has his own, draws a line somewhere else. I'm not faulting him for his psak. He's being a practical person. But I'm not able to utter those words. Yes? I said earlier, I'll repeat it again. I'm a major supporter of Dor Yesharim. And I'm an equally major supporter of those who test themselves individually and know what they have. I am a fierce opponent of people who do neither. And here's the irony. Here we have the intellectual community of Yeshiva University. Ever take all these advanced scientific and social scientific courses, getting into graduate schools, you know? And the average Hasidic couple what I said before, never went even to high school or past high school, they're protected from the genetic diseases, and you're not. That pains me to no end. It's an irony. Are there any other questions? Yes. Rav Zilberstein is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He's a wonderful, wonderful Jew. His heart bleeds for any couple that's going to have these unfortunate children. Tay-Sachs, I didn't go into the graphics of Tay-Sachs. It's devastating. The child is born, after a short while gets sick, is in pain for a couple of years and dies. It's a terrible, terrible thing, number one. Number two, he clearly opposes abortion on halachic grounds. Number three, he probably wrote this tshuva before the big six, IVF, PGD. It's possible that once that existed, Rav Zilberstein would change his tune. You can ask him. He's shlita. He lives in Bnei Brak. You can write him a letter, call him up on the phone, and say, do you still advocate divorce, or will you permit IVF, PGD? I don't know the answer to that question. Yes. That is a problem. Dor Yesharim, and I understand them completely, has a policy. An individual who has already been tested independently, they do not wish to accept that individual to test for Dor Yesharim. That's part of their public policy. They have a principled opposition to people testing and finding out what they have or don't have for various reasons. Stigma, shidduchim of siblings, emotional problems, nerves. I'm not here to question it. Every society has its own set of facts. That being the case, if you wish to be honest, then you, who've already been tested, can no longer opt for Dor Yesharim. If I'm not mistaken, on the piece of paper of the application, it says, were you ever tested? And if the answer is yes, they send you home. So the only honest alternative in that kind of a case is to have the party who was already tested for Dor Yesharim spend more money and be tested directly. Of course, if the person was tested for 11 things and is carrying only one, so he or she would ask the other party just to test for that one. So it's not so expensive, it's not so traumatic, and the chances are very strong that the other person will not have that one. That's what I'd recommend in that kind of a case. Am I making myself clear? Listen, every young man and young lady have their own standards of what they reveal and what they keep to themselves. I'm not here to give specific information, but I would say that by the halfway point, again, in half life, you don't know how what the end point is, that information should be revealed, and they should reach a conclusion as to how to handle it. That's what I think. Are there any final questions? Yes. To my knowledge, and I don't know the Dor Yesharim standards, to my knowledge, as long as at the point that you went to Dor Yesharim, you have not been tested for anything else, they will accept you. The fact that you have in the back of your mind to be tested later, I don't think that disqualifies you. I don't think so. I'll check Rabbi Eckstein in the official Dor Yesharim protocol, to the best of my knowledge. After all, there are sure undoubtedly many people who did go to Dor Yesharim, and then later on, because of the spouse or whatever other reason, they got tested subsequently. As long as at the time that you go there, you haven't been tested, you are satisfying their requirements, to the best of my knowledge. But you should call them up. Yes?
Does that system interfere with insurance coverage of other
testing? Again, insurance is not my specialty. I believe that Dor Yesharim is certainly cheaper than being tested individually because it's strongly subsidized. I must tell you, let me end with this, because I have, there's another speaker after me. Let me end with this, that there is a very wonderful doctor who's specialized in genetics. Her name is Dr. Susan Gross. She's the name of a neighbor of mine in Riverdale. We've been dealing with these questions for a long time together. She has a dream of establishing a center at Yeshiva University, where she is a professor in Einstein, which will in fact be the so-called alternative to Dor Yesharim, which will be again heavily subsidized, so that those who want to know what they carry or not can find a correspondingly inexpensive and ideally even free center for this kind of testing. As we speak, it remains a dream. So therefore, if you want to get tested right now, it's going to cost you money. There are some insurances which will cover, some which will not cover. The specific details, you have to speak to your own family's insurance company. I want to thank you very much. Well, last question. I personally believe that all of the seven that Dor Yesharim is testing for, and I'm not even sure what the other four are, but my guess would apply to those four as well, are serious enough. They're not testing for someone who's going to have blue eyes or brown eyes. Huh? Are serious enough that they warrant this kind of testing. There were certain individuals at the time who said, Tay-Sachs, yes, because that's fatal within 2-3 years. And everything else, no. I don't agree. I believe that all of these diseases should be tested for. And I, as you heard, I'm even advocating testing for things which are not recessive. The BRCA, that's my bias, which I gave away at the beginning. I believe that knowledge is important, valuable, can save lives, and I have a certain measure of confidence in my listening community that they can take it. You know, they're coming from a different mindset than some of the people who are in the more, we'll call it, Haredi communities. I'm sure that I'm not always right, but some will just will not be able to take it. What should I do about these questions? We have another speaker after me.
Yeah,
okay, the last two questions. Okay, yes.
Are these diseases only for Ashkenaz people?
No, I'm sure that Sephardic people have... Being Sephardi protects you from many diseases, but not from all of them. Guaranteed. They're guaranteed. Yes. Now you open the Pandora's box. May a woman who's pregnant be tested for Down syndrome? My opinion is yes. On a number of grounds. Number one, there are some rabbanim who permit abortions of Down syndrome babies. It's written in the great throne of great rabbis. Number one. Number two, if one is not even contemplating that and one wants to bring up the baby, it is extraordinarily valuable to know at the time of the birth that the child is Downs. You have the child born in a more advanced hospital, some little dinky place, in an advanced hospital with a very good NICU. They can rush the baby in, they can save his life with a heart operation. There are a lot of important reasons to know about it. And number three, I believe that if they're going to carry the baby, even though they're going to have maybe 5 extra months of emotional trauma, it'll grow on them gradually, as opposed to a couple that suddenly, boom, out of nowhere, comes out of Down syndrome, and they have no clue about it. I think that's even harder, if you ask me. So I, in fact, would say it's allowed. Yes?
For that same reason, would you recommend opting to be tested for the dominant diseases that Dor Yesharim won't test for?
I already said the answer was yes, if it makes sense. We're not going to test for every single disease in the world. But if there's a likelihood that there is a possible genetic disease, someone lost a relative or... Not lost a relative, a close relative had an early onset of breast cancer or colon cancer. I'm giving those two examples, and maybe any others. I believe in that case the testing is appropriate. It's my belief. I give over the floor to Mrs. Goldenberg, and if there's time at the end, I'll answer more questions. I'm telling you in advance, I have to leave here in about 20-something minutes to catch a van, so if she goes beyond 20 minutes, I'll have to sneak out. So forgive me.
Thank you, Rav Willig, for sharing that perspective with us. Now we're going to be hearing from Danira Goldenberg, who's actually a Stern graduate. She graduated in 1997 with her bachelor's in biology. Then she went to Mount Sinai School of Medicine, where she received her master's in genetic counseling. and she did her graduate work focusing on the lack of awareness of genetic diseases in high school and college populations, which is a problem we are trying to address tonight. At this point, she's teaching high school science as well as lecturing in various schools about different genetic issues. So now Danira will share her presentation with us. Thank you.
First of all, I just want to apologize. I just checked and the panel is up to 13 at NYU. So my mistake. It's a different number in all the different hospitals. So NYU is now up to 13 different tests. Thank you for having me here tonight. I'm not going to keep you too long because it is getting late, and a lot of it has been reviewed already with Rev. Willig, and a lot of the information is already in the orange sheets. So I'll try to go through some of the information that you may not be aware of just yet. The topic tonight is Jewish genetic disease screening. And I will be essentially providing you with the basic facts of Jewish genetic disease screening, identify the different programs which you're already somewhat familiar with, such as Dor Yesharim, going to a major medical center such as NYU, or even going to your obstetrician or physician's office to have the test done there directly. We're going to just compare some of the different testing styles, and again, this might be a bit of a review from what we've been going over tonight already. We're going to do some review of basic genetics, inheritance of autosomal recessive diseases, which happens to be what most of these diseases that we're testing for, the category they fall under. Some facts about these specific diseases, the testing protocol involved, how results are handled in the different medical centers or Dor Yesharim, and what are some of the different medical options, which has already been covered for the most part. So for those of you who are either majoring or mastering in genetics or in review from high school biology, we are all aware that our genes come in pairs. They're the basic unit of heredity. Genes are found along structures called chromosomes in every cell of our body. And we have chromosomes from each parent. Because we have a set from each parent, all of our genes come in pairs as well. So each of our genes, one from our mom, one from our dad, will exist in two. Sometimes mutations may be found. How these mutations occur is a whole other story. And we'll go through maybe just briefly what's happening with a lot of these Jewish genetic diseases. And in certain instances, when a mutation is found, diseases can occur. It does not always have to be the case. Sometimes every individual in this room probably has some type of genetic alteration. It's really only when that change is a red flag for a disease that there's something to be concerned about. But mutations or genetic changes don't always indicate a disease. Now, with a lot of the diseases that we'll be discussing, they're inherited what we call an autosomal recessive fashion. Autosomal recessive involves inheriting two non-working genes for a disease. Recessive, if you see on the bottom, the definition here, again, requiring two non-working genes to be affected with the disease, and those two genes have to be for the same characteristic, for the same trait. Now, what is a carrier, which is what we've been talking about tonight? A carrier is an individual who has one working gene from one parent and one non-working gene. It is for the same characteristic, but because he or she has a working gene, that is enough to compensate for the non-working gene. So, for example, there's a defective protein in the body as a result of the non-working gene. Because the other gene is functioning properly, they will not have symptoms of the disease. They will be healthy individuals and go through life without any complications of that disorder. However, as we've been discussing, they have a 50% chance of passing on that non-working gene to the next generation. And this is just typically in genetics how we indicate someone who is a carrier of a disease. The dominant represents the working gene, the lowercase represents the non-working gene, and it depends on, different letters are used for different conditions. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Punnett square. I'm sure all of you at least recognize this. This is basically a grid, how we track the inheritance of certain traits by the combination of a sperm and egg carrying different genes. This Punnett square indicates two individuals who are both carriers, a dominant and a lowercase, both carriers of a specific disease. And if you look at these statistics, you will see that 75% of the time the child will be normal, will be healthy. Of that 75%, as you can see, two out of three will be carriers. Again, healthy individuals with no symptoms of the disease. And one in four chances, just each pregnancy, Punnett squares represent the statistics of a child being born with each pregnancy with that disease. So with an autosomal recessive disease, there is a one in four chance the child will be affected with that disease. And this is just, again, a repeat of just what those numbers, what those letters represent. Now, why are we targeting the Ashkenazi Jewish population? As many of you are probably aware, this is a population that's easier to study. Ashkenazi Jews, Baruch Hashem, have remained isolated over the years and have intermarried more so than most other ethnic groups. And because they have remained more of an isolated group, the genes are staying within that population. They're not spreading across all the different ethnic groups. And so we happen to be able to study more genetic diseases within this population. It does not mean that these genes are not found in other ethnic groups. And just something to be aware of, even the Sephardic community can carry, I think somebody asked that question, can carry these non-working genes. The frequency of being a carrier may not be as high, but if somebody is, if there's two members in a couple and one is Sephardic and one is Ashkenazi, it does not mean that they do not have to worry about Jewish genetic diseases. They should both get tested, just the likelihood of the other individual carrying it won't be as high. And just to give you an idea, Ashkenazi Jewish refers to places such as Central and Eastern Europe, Russia, Germany, Hungary, Poland, and Romania. How do we do screening? What does it involve? Screening involves a simple blood test, and that blood test is measuring, depending on the disease, two different factors. Either it's measuring the actual DNA, the defect in your DNA, the genetic alteration, and in some cases, some of the tests, such as Tay-Sachs, we also test the enzyme level. What does enzyme level have to do with this? Well, in a lot of these autosomal recessive diseases, there is an enzyme that's not working properly in your body. Having that genetic defect means that you're not producing a necessary enzyme in your body. Typically, that enzyme is there to help build or break substances down. And when that enzyme is missing, that substance will build up, and in many cases, to an abnormal level and lead to a very serious disease like Tay-Sachs, Canavans, or Niemann-Pick. We can determine if both members of the couple are carrying this genetic disease. And then, as Rick Willig mentioned, we can offer, if the couple is married and looking to have children, we can offer prenatal screening. You have heard already about amniocentesis. I'm just going to give you just a general picture of what those two tests are. Amniocentesis and chorionic villus sampling, or CVS, as many of you may have seen it that way. Amniocentesis is a test done on the pregnant woman at about 15 to 18 weeks of pregnancy, where they can actually remove cells that have fallen off the fetus to get an accurate picture of if that fetus, whether or not that fetus is affected. CVS, chorionic villus sampling, is done a little bit earlier, at about 10 to 12 weeks. Also testing, not as much as the cells falling off the fetus, but the placental tissue, which is representative of the same cells, the same genetic makeup of the fetus. Again, that's done a little bit earlier. There are other issues involved. There's a small percentage of risk involved with both these tests, and I'm not getting into all the halakhic issues of what you're going to do once you do that test and what you do with your results. And that's obviously something you want to talk to your Rav or Posig about if the issue ever comes up. I'm going to put up on the screen now all the different tests that are offered, and I just want you to keep in mind, if you are deciding to go through NYU or open testing or receiving your carrier's results, that there's an extreme range in severity, symptoms, life expectancy, carrier frequency, and that's just something to keep in mind if you do decide that you don't feel the need to go for every test. Just keep in mind that they're not all the same. There's some that range from extremely severe death at 3 to 5 years of age, and you'll see on the next slide, some individuals who have other diseases live a normal life. Well, I wouldn't say normal, they're on treatment for the rest of their lives, but they can live well into their 80s and 90s, and as long as they're on this treatment, they won't have that severe symptoms of the disease. And this is a panel of tests that are offered at NYU. I'm not going to spend the whole night, I know it's getting late, going through all the details, especially because when you do go for testing, they're going to go through all this again, and the whole panel will be reviewed at the time you go for any major medical center, and I believe Dor Yisharim as well. But as you can see, if you look at all the different diseases, I've included the carrier frequency, how often they occur in the Ashkenazi Jewish population, ranges anywhere from 1 in 25 to 1 in 200. And I'm just going to give you an idea of the range that we're talking about. If you look at the first three, Tay-Sachs, Canavan, Niemann-Pick disease, those diseases are devastating. They all result in death at about 3 to 5 years of age. There's an extreme variability and with each child. But they all involve a degeneration of the nervous system. And like I said before, it's basically an enzyme building up, and that enzyme is building up in the brain cells. And so these individuals don't really have much of a chance as this fatty material builds up and starts destroying their nervous system altogether. And that is why death occurs at such an early age. But as you go down the list, there are different types of diseases. Gaucher disease, as somebody had asked about before, is a disease with same thing, enzyme is not working properly and it's building up, but it's building up in the liver and the bone marrow and the spleen. So they will have lifelong complications, but it's not normal intelligence. There's no intellect, no nervous system involvement. They may have enlarged organs, lots of bone pain and fractures. and complication of blood disorders, but they may not have any, but they don't have any problems with their intelligence. So it's just a different type of disease to keep in mind. Cystic fibrosis found equally as common in the Caucasian population as in the Ashkenazi Jewish population, so it's not that this is the only community that we're studying. And cystic fibrosis is also another type of disease where these individuals can have normal intellect, but they have chronic respiratory and gastrointestinal problems. There's a mucus that's not being broken down, it's building up in their system, and they eventually will die. Again, it's variable, but about age within 20s and 30 years of age. Fanconi anemia, also I'm not going to run through all the details, I'm just going to just keep in mind the different carrier frequencies, and I'm just going to move down to diseases like maple syrup, urine disease, and glycogen storage disease. Keep in mind with those diseases, they can lead to coma, death, and nervous system degeneration, but these are diseases where if they're caught early, there is preventative measures. There's a special diet that the child can be on, and they can prevent the devastating course of some of the other conditions. So there is different treatment options for the diseases that we're testing for, and for many of those, there are no treatment options as of yet. And finally, I just want to end with Fragile X syndrome, which happens to be one of the tests not offered at Dor Yasharim. Fragile X syndrome, I know it says on the sheet that it's a dominant disease, but I don't mean to make any corrections, but we typically in genetics like to refer to it as an X-linked disease, because it is a disease that the genetic defect is found on the X chromosome. The mother, as probably familiar to all of you, women carry an X and two X chromosomes in every cell of the body, males carry an X and a Y. The X chromosome is where this defect is found, so it's known as an X-linked disease. And as Willard was mentioning before, this is the type of disease that regardless of what the spouse is carrying, that individual will pass it down 50% of the time. If they have the Fragile X gene, they may not have symptoms of the disease, but 50% chance that they are going to pass that disease on, regardless of who they marry, and that is probably one of the reasons that Dor Yasharim does not feel that is a test that should be screened for. And again, if you have any specific questions about any of those tests or for more details, you can see me after. What happens if someone's found to be positive? This is applying to major medical centers. Your results are usually obtained within 2 to 3 weeks. If you're not found to be a carrier, typically in most major medical centers, they'll send the results directly to the physician that you indicated on the form. If both members are found to be carriers, genetic counseling is provided, and this will involve going through a detailed family history, discussing who else in the family may be at risk, because remember, when you're found to be a carrier, your other relatives are at risk as well. There may be couples who are already married in your family who may be at risk of being carriers and passing it on to their children, so it's just important to review those details. And again, like we said before, family planning, whether it's doing an amniocentesis or CVS during pregnancy, or the possibility of IVF and PGD. In major medical centers such as NYU, there will be full disclosure. You will get the results of all your carrier tests. Many insurance plans are accepted. You're obviously going to have to check, I think, on the form here. It goes to most of the insurance companies that are accepted. And I know I've been told that NYU has some kind of arrangement if your insurance company is not accepted where they will work something out with you. I don't know. I think you could see one of the coordinators of the event about that afterwards. I just put on the board, on the screen here, the Stern College group screening will be held on February 21st, 2007, and I think you have all that information over there. And this is the phone number, I don't know if it's on the form, but if you want to write that down. If you have any specific questions about tests and meeting with a genetic counselor at NYU, you can probably call that number directly. So these slides I can actually probably speed through because a lot of it's been covered already, but Rabbi Joseph Eckstein founded Dor Yasharim in the early 1980s, and this is a premarital genetic testing program for Ashkenazi Jews in Israel and the U.S., and as we've already spoken about, you're tested under a code, anonymously. It is endorsed by many rabbanim and physicians across the world. You are identified by a code if both individuals are found to be carriers. If both individuals are found to be carriers, the match is deemed incompatible. One may request to know which disease they're incompatible for, and that's important. If you do find out that you're incompatible, you have the right to ask Dor Yasharim. They will tell you which disease you're incompatible for. If only one person is a carrier, you can go ahead with the match. They will tell you that it's a compatible match. Whether or not each one of you are carrying a specific non-working gene that the other one is not carrying, you will not find out. Okay, you are just told that you can go ahead with the match and it is a compatible match. and carrier status is not a divulged you, and that's primarily to avoid any kind of stigma by being a carrier. Testing for Dori Sharm is available on February 7th at Stern. Again, we spoke about this before. Individuals who are engaged, married, or already been tested, or know that they are a carrier, are not eligible for Dori Sharm screening. Also, if you lose your ID number because you are, to protect your confidentiality of your results, you're identified under this code, and so if you lose your code number, you will have to get retested. Once you do contact Dori Sharm for compatibility, I'm told that you receive results. You'll get a call back within one business day, and the cost for Dori Sharm is $150 through the Stern group rate. I have been told that if you go on your own to Dori Sharm, it's $200. The results typically take approximately 3 to 4 months, but if any need arises, they may be able to rush the results for a small fee extra. Okay, and again, they only will give you the results on the phone with the phone number that you gave them. You can't call from another number and say, can I have my results? They will only release it to that specific number that you gave them at the time of the initial blood draw. And you can check the compatibility of two numbers at any time. You leave the codes in the automated system, and somebody will contact you within one business day. I included here the panel of tests given by Dori Sharm. There are a couple that are not offered by Dori Sharm, and if you have specific reasons as to why one test is and is not offered at Dori Sharm, you can take that number that I gave you, that I will be giving you on the screen, and give them a call. If there's a specific condition that you know of in your family and you're concerned about the testing, you can give them a call as well. And here's that number. I don't know if you have that on the orange sheet. And again, just a review, the three different options is either going through a center like Dori Sharm, a major medical center such as NYU, or again, going through your obstetrician or your doctor's office privately. I did not know how to take that off, so sorry about that. One of the options, as Willick has been speaking about for carrier couples, is to terminate the relationship. And I can tell you from experience talking to some of these couples that it's a devastating situation to have to deal with. And this is even more why it's so important, as Willick was mentioning, to go as early as possible, even at the beginning of a relationship. Because if you get far along and then you find out that you are both carriers, terminating the relationship is a difficult thing to do. And for some, as it may be necessary to mend a bond, it is still a very difficult situation to be in. Sorry about that again. And IVF and PGD, the definitions are on the board, where Bullock did review it, but again, IVF is where we are putting the egg and sperm together outside of the woman's body, PGD, where we are actually testing that embryo before we implant it back into the woman to see if it's affected with that disease. IVF and PGD, again, is an option for couples who are both carriers. It's an option for couples who are not engaged or married. However, it's an issue that needs to be spoken about with your doctors and your post-gym, and I'm not going to go into any of the halachic issues in detail. What are the advantages to full disclosure? Well, for one, just being aware of your medical status. Many individuals want to know what they are carrying. It's part of their medical history, and they feel the need to know that information, and they feel that they have the right to know that information. Perhaps you want to share it with a family member. If you find out you're a carrier, you want to be able to tell other family members who may be at risk, a sister, a brother, or another relative in the family. And also, if you are in a relationship or you're about to be in a relationship, you can encourage that other individual to go for testing. So for example, you come back a carrier for Tay-Sachs disease, you know now that at the start of a relationship, before you even get serious, that's something that you have to discuss with that individual. You have to offer to the other individual that they go for Tay-Sachs testing, even before you start the relationship, if you're comfortable. And somebody was discussing that it may be an uncomfortable situation to discuss early on, but if you know you're a carrier of Tay-Sachs, you should be smart and do it before you get any more intimate with the other individual. What are some of the disadvantages to full disclosure? There is a belief by many that knowing such information is a psychological burden. You feel there's something wrong with you, you feel tainted, you feel that you have some kind of genetic defect in your body. Even though we all know that being a carrier does not mean that you have any symptoms of the disease, you can't control the way people think, and a lot of individuals out there are naive and do not know what it means to be a carrier, and there is a fear that you will feel that negative that negative vibe about being a carrier, and also just the stigma of being a carrier. If somebody finds out you're a carrier, is that fear, what are they thinking about me? Am I going to lose my chance at a shidduch? Are people going to be talking? Are people going to be saying, be careful, don't date that individual, they're carrying that non-working gene? Again, it's a lot of it's being naive, but it's a fear that there may be out there. And then again, there's that burden to release the results. You find out you're a carrier, now you have an obligation. Every time you're in a relationship, even before you get to the second date, it's going through your head the entire time, wait a minute, I'm a Tay-Sachs carrier, I can't start getting involved with this guy because he needs to know, he needs to go for testing. So it's also may be a burden for some to have that information and not be able to give it over right away. And again, like we said, it is an uncomfortable thing to deal with, so it may make it difficult. I just want to sum up that Jewish genetic disease screening is a crucial thing to do. The earlier in the relationship that it is done, the better, if not before the relationship even begins. We went through the different programs available. The choice of screening, again, is going to be a personal decision. No one can answer that for you. I just included different individuals you can speak with for more guidance, whether it's your parents, a rav, a doctor, or possibly a counselor, a therapist. I want to thank you for allowing me to speak here tonight, and if you have any questions, feel free to call me at that number with any concerns or just to find out more information. Any questions now? Are there any questions? Yes. When you go to a major medical center, you will sit down with a group of individuals and go through all the details and specifics of panel of diseases. I'm not sure if that's going to be going on. I don't know, but I'm not sure that's going on at your physician's office. What they may do is send your blood away, but I don't know if there's a genetic counselor available to speak with you at each of the locations of the different doctor's offices. So probably just how much information you're getting. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other questions? Yes. It's still important to get screened. Like I said, it can be found in the Sephardic community as well. We would just offer which direction you would go in, whether NYU or Dor Yesharim? No. Anyone else?
Sometimes the person could be thinking, find they're incompatible. Once they find that invalid, they know that they're a carrier for something, so they're going to have a stigma.
Right, but the chance. It's very unlikely that, for example, someone has a 1 in 25 chance and they're going to happen to match with someone who's a 1 in 25 chance also. The likelihood of both being carriers for a disease, we're hoping, is not going to be that high. So at times, unfortunately, people will find out, but it's not going to be as common as getting, I would say most Ashkenazi Jews have a 1 in 5 chance of being a carrier for something. So that's much less likely. So it's a greater chance to find out that you are a carrier than to find out that you are both carriers together. Any other questions? Well, good luck, and feel free to call me with any questions. Take care.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this important event tonight. I'd like to encourage all of you. We had about 100 people here. That's maybe 10% of Stern College. So tell your friends about the importance of genetic testing. Show them your information sheet. There will be registration tables set up in the lobbies during the coming week. And you can also email us at the address that you have, and we'll be posted around. Tonight's event was one of the first of the semester for the Medical Ethics Society. We also have an event coming up on plastic surgery here on this campus, DNR, Do Not Resuscitate Orders, uptown. And we encourage you to get involved with the Student Medical Ethics Society if this is something that you're interested in. Finally, I would like to thank some people who joined us tonight. We were honored to have with us Professor Rickless, Professor Ash, as well as Tachaya Feuerman, who's representing Dor Yesharim. If there are any specific questions about Dor Yesharim, you're welcome to contact Chaya Feuerman, who's sitting here in the front row. Thank you very much, and good night. Oh, sorry. As you leave, there's a box where you can turn in your registration forms if you already know which program you'd like to register with. Otherwise, you can register later. And if you have any questions, please contact the Medical Ethics Society. Thank you.